Live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Beauty and the Beast, and welcome to our show today.
Thank you.
Dr. Rosha Leal, thank you so much for being here. Why are we playing Phoebe Bryson and Celine Dion today? This iconic song.
Yeah, so what we decided on for today is talk about, I mean, the Oscars were this week.
Yes.
So we thought we'd talk about like Oscar winning songs and specifically songs that have won the Oscar, the Golden Globe, and the Grammy Award for Best Original Composition from a Motion Picture.
Did it win everything? Was this one of those?
Yes,
songs?
It is one of
Oscar?
Those. Oscar? The Grammy Award and the Golden Globe Award.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Sometimes the songs become bigger than the film.
Exactly. And
this one did well. I could see the animation
my
head.
So both did well. The movie was a huge success. And but before we get into that, I think it's important that people understand that in order to win, and we're going to have an example of this a little bit later on, but in order to win the Best Original Composition from a Motion Picture, the song has to be written for that motion picture.
Yes. In other words, we cannot take a song that you had written for your own album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then say, can we use your music, and then we can then use it for our film. It cannot work like that. We have to have commissioned you for the film.
Exactly. And in order to win that category. Now, motion picture companies, I think what they generally do is there are sometimes or some examples in which they will do a cover version and include it in the movie. And it's possibly because there isn't a budget for that kind of thing. Because when they commission composers to write music, they want to buy out the rights in those compositions.
Oh, I see.
So to get a cover version is much cheaper because the song already exists, and so they don't have to go through the whole thing about commissioning someone to write a song. But in this specific example, this song was specifically written for the movie. And interestingly enough, it was a big launching pad for Celine Dion. Hmm. Up to that point, Celine Dion had been very famous as a French language artist, but not an English language artist. And in 1991, she was approached to do the theme song for a sequel to an animated movie called American Tail. The original theme song was performed by Linda Ronstadt and Aaron Neville, and it was titled Somewhere Out There.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie was a huge...
I remember that.
That movie was a success. The music was a huge success. And they decided to do a second movie, a sequel, American Tail, Five-O Goes West, in 1991. And the composer, the commissioned composer, was a guy called James Horner, and he found Celine Dion and he was like, oh, this woman would be brilliant for the theme song. And they approached Celine Dion. Celine Dion recorded the demo recording, submitted it, and Steven Spielberg, when he heard it, he was the executive producer, he was like, who's this person? And James Horner was like, she's a French-Canadian singer. She's going to be huge. I think she will be great for the movie. And he was like, no, we need a keystone artist to do this theme song for our movie. Unfortunately, Celine Dion's not famous enough, and he cut her. He rejected the whole song. Celine Dion was devastated because this was supposed to be her big moment. She was going to become this international superstar appearing in this movie, and it didn't happen. The movie was a flop. The song was a flop. The theme song for the movie, which was titled Dreams to Dream. And a few months later, she got approached by Disney to do the theme song for Beauty and the Beast. And she did the theme song, and it became a smash hit, and it gave her the desired effect of becoming a world-renowned vocalist. After the success of that single, her career just blew off.
Mm.
And so it's very interesting. Sometimes the thing that you want is not really...
It's not quite.
Yeah, the thing that you're going to get is probably better. Yeah.
What made the song for you? I mean, you are someone who understands music.
Yeah.
What was it about the song?
Look, I think... Disney was very clever. Firstly, they had a commission. They commissioned a guy called Alan Menken, and Howard Ashman to write the song. The two guys had been famous for writing musical theatre music, and they were so successful at writing musical theatre music that they were approached by Disney a few years earlier to write the music for The Little Mermaid, and they wrote Under the Sea, which also won the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Golden Globe.
Sure.
And so,
and it was brilliant as well.
Yes, yes. And
so isn't
iconic
it interesting
music.
That, I mean, sometimes you've got to match the success of the film
exactly.
with the music. In other words, the film itself has to live up
to
music. This music.
Yeah. And so they wrote that. It was the first time that a Disney have like these like staff composers that will then write for the music. So when they were going to release Beauty and the Beast, they got the same duo back again to write the theme song for Beauty and the Beast. Now, I think what the big success story here is, firstly, the version that is famous is the Dame Angela Lansbury version of the song, which if you watch the movie, it's just so emotional. Like the Mrs. Potts, she's the pot in the story, and this voice of this older lady, like almost telling a story, and it's not the best voice. And Angela Lansbury, when she heard the song, she was like, "I don't want to do it. I can't sing those notes." And they're like, "No, don't worry. We will work around your voice." And she recorded it. And if you listen to the original Beauty and the Beast, it's just so beautiful.
It's magical,
like the way that she did. And she actually performed it at the Oscars that following year. Anyway, so brilliant. When Celine Dion heard Angela Lansbury's version, she was like, "I've got to do this song." So she recorded the song with Peebo Bryson. Now, I think the secret to the success of Beauty and the Beast is the combination of the two voices.
I would never, if you had asked me to pair them, I wouldn't have been
exactly.
able to do that.
So you've got the soulful, beautiful, like smoky voice of Peebo Bryson blended with Celine Dion's like power ballad diva vocal, and you combine those two together, it's like R&B and pop just blend together so beautifully, and it's just like the orchestration of the song, it's just like everything about that song just works so beautifully. And so that to me is what the secret to that success is.
Alright, should we do more music?
Yes, let's do the next one.
Big song.
Yes.
Big musician.
Indeed. Whitney Houston, The Voice. This song, I cried too many times to this song because it's just...
Let's ask you the backstory. It's always nice to hear the backstory.
So, yes.
So while they were filming,
yeah,
lots of rumors about what was happening there.
With Kevin and...
With her.
Yeah.
She was a mess.
Yeah, she was a mess.
She was as high as a kite.
Yeah.
And sometimes couldn't film... Apparently, she couldn't even do that that poster for somebody else because she was too high to actually, you know, do the photo shoot. It was that kind of a mess.
Yeah.
I'm questioning how was it possible for
to
her to record this?
Yeah, to get
in
this
that
vocal.
State of... I mean, so apparently the filming was just like...
A mess.
Oh, Whitney,
but I mean, I think the
Whitney,
last...
Whitney, let's just do it.
I think it was a long time.
Was there a big gap?
Well...
Or so, was it one of those, she's just talented, and when she gets into the studio, it doesn't matter.
And that was, I think, the problem with Whitney, is the fact that she was so uber talented.
Yeah, she was.
That she could knock it out of the park with very little.
One shot.
And she was still quite young at this point.
Yes.
So she was getting away with doing...
Everything.
With just being able to do whatever she wanted to. Mm. And I think because of that... feeling of imperviousness, she just felt that, you know, the drugs weren't affecting her, she was still able to deliver, etc., etc. There are so many stories related to this specific song. It was originally written in 1974 by Dolly Parton.
Yes.
And and it was a big...
She still earns from these
she
royalties.
She still earns from the song. And 1974, and it's not even a love song, it's a song about... it's a goodbye song to her former... business partner, and she decided that she was going to go on her own, and she wrote the song as like a little going away present. The song was a huge success on the country charts, and then in 1982 it was included in a movie for the first time, a Dolly Parton and Burt Reynolds a Burt Reynolds song called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and so it was included in a movie for the first time in 1982. and once again went to number one on the country charts, but it never crossed over. Elvis Presley in the 1970s heard about this song, and he was like, I want to do this song. And the Colonel Tom Parker, his manager, approached Dolly Parton and said, the King wants to do your song. And at that stage, Dolly Parton had just launched her solo career, and everyone was like, this is brilliant, this is going to make you a superstar. And she said, no, I'm not going to let Elvis Presley do the song. And everyone was like, why? And the response was that Elvis Presley had this principle that every time he covered a song, he would buy the rights in the song.
And she wasn't going to have it.
And she was like, oh, hell no. I'm not selling the rights to my song.
Absolutely not.
She was like, this is the only thing I will leave my children one day. And she never had children. But but essentially,
she had children.
Yeah.
She had children.
Yes. Her weapons of mass distraction.
Yes, she had children. Yes.
So she said, I'm not going to sell this. This is the only thing I'm going to leave my family one day. I'm not selling the song. So if he wants to cover the song, he's welcome to. But he's not getting the rights. I'm not giving him the rights in the song. And so she refused to allow him to do that. And everyone was like, you're crazy. He's the king of rock and roll. How will you not allow him to do that? And about 15 years later, Whitney Houston covers the song. Mm. Now, the original song that was meant to be used on The Bodyguard was a song called What Becomes of the Broken Hearted by Jimmy Rufin, 1962 song. But the song had just been used in another movie called Fried Green Tomatoes, and it was covered by Paul Young. Anyway, so that was off the table. They couldn't use a song, and that left the whole executive crew trying to scurry around for a new song. And Kevin Costner had incidentally heard a 1975 version of I Will Always Love You, but performed by Linda Ronstadt.
Mm.
And he was like, Whitney, this is your song. And she was like, I'm not doing no country music.
Mm.
And he was like, well, this is, if you add your flavor and your spice to the song,
it's not going to be
it's
country
going
music.
To be the a song. Mega hit. Anyway, they brought David Foster in, who's an iconic producer,
mm-hmm.
and they brought him in, and they decided on the arrangement. Whitney Houston and David Foster decided on the arrangement, and when they presented the song to Clive Davis at Arista mm-hmm. Records, mm-hmm. he was like, I don't like this a cappella thing at the beginning. Mm. It doesn't work. And Whitney Houston put her foot down and she said, the a cappella thing stays. That's how we're going to do it. Mm. This is my song. Mm. I'm going to do this thing. Anyway, the song then becomes a massive number one hit single, 14 weeks at number one, and was sold 25 million units internationally. It was a mega hit. The Bodyguard soundtrack is still the biggest selling soundtrack to this day. 40 million units. But because the song is a cover version, it does not qualify as an Oscar-winning song.
Isn't that the tragedy of it all?
Exactly. So although it had attained this huge success, big number one hit single,
it
number
was
one
never written originally for the movie. Film.
So therefore it didn't qualify as an Oscar-winning song. And so everyone was like, how can this song not be? It's like, because it was not written for the movie. And in order for it to qualify, it has to be written for the movie. And so she never got the Oscar.
But what a big song. What a big song.
Like, mind-boggling. And actually, it was at number one for so long in the United States that there were even cases of neighbors shooting each other in the U.S. because they put that song on repeat.
Oh.
And they were irritating the neighbors so much that there were incidences of people shooting their neighbors to stop them from playing the song.
If you've watched Idols long enough, you'd know.
And this is one of those songs that, because Whitney makes it sound so effortless, everyone thinks that they can do it. So every time I'm sitting in a situation where I've got to judge things, like, and people bring out the I Will Always Love You, I'm like,
don't do it.
I'm just going to sit here waiting for the chorus and see where this thing goes, because it's never going to end well, or it seldomly ends well.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more Oscar winning music with Sheldon Rochelle. Okay, what film was that?
So that was from a movie called Thank God It's Friday.
Mm.
And it was written by a guy called Paul Jabara.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Jabara was actually from the musical theater world. And he then became an artist and got signed to this record label called Casablanca Records,
yeah,
which was a big disco label in the 1970s owned by a guy called Neil Bogart.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like in the late 1970s, Neil Bogart decided that he'd had so much success with music that he wanted to venture into movies, mm-hmm, very much like what Berry Gordy also did in the 1970s, where he delved into the movie-making world. And the first big movie that he did was Saturday Night Fever in, mm-hmm, 1977. And then he did this movie called Thank God It's Friday. Mm-hmm. And both movies are considered to be like the seminal moment in the history of disco, because the music that was in the movies became so massive that it really launched this genre that had been on the periphery of society for quite some time, but hadn't really ever broken into the mainstream. And mm-hmm, Saturday Night Fever and Thank God It's Friday really helped push it forward. And so this was the theme song from Thank God It's Friday, and it landed up winning the Oscar, the Grammy, and the Golden Globe for Paul Jabara. But initially, incidentally, one of the minor players, he just played the synths on this track, was David Foster, who we spoke about in the previous song.
Yeah.
So David Foster was employed as a session player for this song. And I think he also... Oh, no, he didn't. But anyway, so Paul Jabara really believed in this song, and he wanted Donna Summer to record it. But Giorgio Moroder, who's the guy who was Donna Summer's mentor and her producer, didn't like the song and he didn't think it was going to work. And so what happened was, when Donna Summer was in Puerto Rico, Paul Jabara locked Donna Summer in the toilet and played her the song and said, you've got to hear the song, it's going to be a banger. And so she loved it so much that she said, all right, make an arrangement of the song, I will record it. And she recorded, and the rest is history. And oh, here we wonderful. Are with this big number one song. It just took over the charts.
All right, we continue our conversations around movies and films and music that win the Oscars, and some, you'll be surprised, don't win because exactly. of technicalities, as Dr. Leal has just told us. I will take your calls, by the way. What do you think of what we're playing? 086-000-0959. Are you surprised by these stories of songs that make it and those that actually didn't make it? Let's take one more song before we go to a break. So that's Peter Bryson and Regina Bell.
Regina Bell, yeah.
Okay. Another one very popular song.
Yes.
And the movie too.
Yes. So what happened with Beauty and the Beast was that Howard Ashman and Alan Menken wrote that song together. And Howard Ashman unfortunately acquired AIDS just before that song landed up winning, and passed
sure.
away in 1992
sure.
before you could even get the Oscar, Golden Globe, and the Grammy Award for Beauty and the Beast. And so that sort of left Alan Menken high and dry, and Disney scurrying around to find a composer that would compose with Alan Menken. And so they found Sir Tim Rice. And Sir Tim Rice and Alan Menken wrote A Whole New World for Aladdin. And so this was the third time
sure.
that Alan Menken had won the Grammy Award, the Oscar, and the Golden Globe, and he landed up doing it one more time with sure. Colors of the Wind for the Pocahontas movie.
I remember that.
Yeah. So he's the only person ever to win it four times, all three, and three of the four times he also won for Best Original Score Music for a movie. But, you know, like I was reflecting on, you know, like there was a whole controversy last month about the Grammy Awards. Mm-hmm. And what I love about the way the Americans have done their award season is that they've taken it out of the end of the year, which is what we do here in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they move it to the beginning
of the
year.
Yeah.
Where people notoriously Fresher. Don't have a lot of work.
Fresher.
Yeah. And so it really stimulates industry and all of that stuff. But like last month with the Grammy Awards, there was a whole controversy that Beyonce has been nominated five times for the Album of the Year Grammy and never won the Album of the Year Grammy, and Jay-Z was upset and yada, yada, yada. Now, there's someone at the Oscars who's been nominated 15 times for the Oscar for Best Original Composition from a Motion Picture has never won.
Who's that?
Diane Warren. And
no
Diane
way.
Warren has been nominated 15 times, and this year she was nominated for the 15th time and did not get the award. And so, you know, you know, Beyonce's five is nothing compared to 15. So
yes, but the entitlement.
Yeah.
Did you hear the husband?
Yeah. Mm. So I just think, you know, like people cry over spilled milk all the time, but like she's got 32 Grammys and Diane Warren has no Oscars.
Exactly.
So okay. It's very sad. But
so this song, Beauty and the Beast.
So this was A Whole New World. And so Sir Tim Rice co-wrote with Alan Menken, and he landed up doing another triple threat when he wrote the music for The Lion King. And so him and Sir Elton John, Sir Tim Rice, and Sir Elton John, then in 1995, wrote the theme music for The Lion King. And the theme song, Can You Feel the Love Tonight, won the Oscar, the Golden Globe, and the Grammy for that as well. And the two of them are both EGOTs.
Iconic.
And both of them are EGOTs. Mm. So that's the Emmy, the Golden Globe, the Oscar, and the Tony. Mm. And this year, Sir Elton John, on his retirement, won the Emmy Award. Mm. So both of them landed up winning this award.
Isn't that? I mean, like, what's next? After winning that, what do you do?
Exactly. You retire.
Yes. While you're still up there.
Exactly. While you're still at the head of the game.
Taking a quick break. I'll be back with more and very happy to hear from you. 086-000-00959.
Kaya Talk.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Sure. Mm. So you've got what are the elements that make like a good song for like a movie? It's like the dramatics you can hear in this song.
Well, there's definitely the choirs there, which gives you that like power, the orchestra. What I love about this song is that you've got this two very contrasting artists. You've got Common, who's an iconic rapper, but he's got like, he's not like the other gangster rappers that we used to, who are quite fast. He's almost poetic.
Mm.
So that's like Common's thing, is that he's more of a poetic rapper. Mm-hmm. So you've got this like almost like iconic oracle kind of like rapper in the song. Mm-hmm. And then you've got John Legend, who's got this smooth, beautiful voice. And you're blending those two cultures together and then throwing in this orchestra and this the choir. And I think the whole big thing with the reason why music in movies often changes the zeitgeist of where we are in our evolution of our society is the fact that there's so much emotion in a movie. Mm. Like you're watching the movie, you're there with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, and there's like, it's a special moment in your life. You just had dinner, whatever, or you're celebrating, or you're doing something, and you're going to the movie and you're watching this thing, and there's all this emotion that's happening in the movie, and then the music's playing in the background, and it's almost like a subconscious seed that gets planted in you that... Oh, okay. Oh, I remember. Oh, that's the song that was playing. Oh, and it reminds you, because music is so emotive and it hits you on so many levels. Like when you're listening to a piece of music that reminds you of your childhood, the second you hear that song, you can smell where you were. Mm. You can feel the feelings of the sun beating against your face. Mm. You can feel all the emotions. You are transported back in history. And so that is the secret of like music and movies, is you're combining the imagery with the music.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's such an emotional connection between what you're watching and what you're listening to. And I think that's this, and this Common John Legend song, Glory, from Selma, is
and
a perfect
is,
example.
And John Legend has got like such a strong, solid voice.
Yes.
Like it's
but it's almost
somehow.
Like a preacher's voice.
Yes, very anchored in something quite solid.
And you can hear the strong like gospel roots in that song. So it's hitting you with this like nostalgic feeling of like being in a church and feeling the, you know, hearing the pastor telling you a story. And I mean, this movie is so iconic. Mm. And then the music is even more iconic. I've heard this song performed by so many people because there's such an emotional connection to the message of what the song is and what the movie was all about. Mm. And how, you know, the situation in the United States with the Jim Crow laws and the civil rights movement and the rising up of the civil rights movement and the murder of one of their leaders at the time, which resulted in the marches, which resulted in the song, which eventually resulted in this specific song. So that's, I mean, yeah, all of those things.
So when you and I were talking, preparing for this show, there are some songs that I assumed were just going to be on the list. And you kept saying, no, they didn't cut it.
Yeah, they didn't cut it.
Because, you know, there are many technicalities. Tina Turner, Bond.
Yes.
I thought, obvious.
No. And so the interesting thing is that in 2019, Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas won the Oscar, the Golden Globe, and the Grammy Award for their song No Time to Die.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, interestingly enough, like with the Alan Menken and Howard Ashman thing, Disney's got a very specific formula of like how they want a song to be written. And the James Bond themes seem to go along similar lines. There's like a certain tick box that you've got to fulfill in order for a song to be considered a James Bond theme song. Mm-hmm. Like there has to be an allusion to the original John Barry music in every one of the songs, so it ties everything together. I mean, the James Bond franchise is a brand.
Yeah.
And it's a very closely guarded, like Louis Vuitton or Gucci. It's like a brand and you've got to stick. I mean, it doesn't matter who the creative director is.
Yes.
If you've got Pharrell Williams doing Louis Vuitton, it doesn't matter. There are certain signatures that have to be in a James Bond anything.
Yeah.
That Golden Eye by Tina Turner is an inspirational song. I mean, it's when I heard that song for the first time, I was like, my goodness, this woman is a legend. The voice is powerful. The orchestration is amazing. But unfortunately, it didn't win all three of those awards. But Billie Eilish and Phineas struck gold with their No Time to Die. The song was... Usually what happens with the James Bond movies is when they're about to launch the movie, they will send out a call for songs,
mm-hmm.
and people will then submit their songs for consideration.
Mm.
And Billie Eilish and Phineas were approached and they said, you know, you should submit a song for the James Bond movie, No Time to Die. And they did. They wrote a song and they submitted it. And Hans Zimmer, who's this iconic orchestrator, composer, producer from Germany, he was the music guy for the movie, and he had to sift through all the songs, and when he got to this specific song, he was like, this is the one this is the one that I want for this movie. They went in, they recorded it at Sir George Martin's recording studio in London, Air Studios, and they recorded the song, and the song became a massive hit, number one in the UK, and landed up winning all three awards. Billie Eilish became the youngest person in history to ever win an Oscar for Best Original Composition from a Motion Picture. She was 18 years old.
I mean, like,
exactly.
What were you doing when you were 18?
We were thinking about what the next hamburger was. And so that was in 2019. And then in 2024, at the beginning of the awards season, in January, she won the Golden Globe for the Barbie movie, which is a commentary on feminism and was the biggest grossing movie of last year. But like, the movie is not just about a plastic doll. It's about the deeper significance of feminism and women's rights and how women fit into society, etc. So there were some brilliant songs. The movie's music guy was Mark Ronson, who's this iconic producer who did Amy Winehouse's Back in Black album, amongst many other albums. And so he said there's going to be some famous people on it. Dua Lipa was on it. And then Billie Eilish and Phineas wrote this song called What Was I Made For?
Yeah.
And the song won the Golden Globe. And I was like, oof. This could be another trifecta. This could eventually become...
Be this, yeah.
So there's only six people in history that have ever won it more than once.
Wow.
Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, Tim Rice, and now also Billie Eilish and Phineas. So last month, they won the Grammy Award for Best Original Composition from a Motion Picture.
Yeah.
And then this week, they won the Oscar. So Billie Eilish is one of only six, Billie Eilish and her brother are one of only six people in history to have ever won the three more than once. And so this What Was I Made For, the performance on Monday at the Academy Awards was exceptional. But my favorite performance was Ryan Gosling's performance, which was, I don't know if you saw it, but it was exceptional.
I'll go back.
So go watch it because it's very interesting. So in the 1960s, it could be 1950s, Marilyn Monroe did a movie called Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Mm-hmm. In that movie, she comes out in this beautiful, like a cerise pink satin gown, and all the men in the background are dressed in black tuxedos with a red sash.
Hmm.
At the Oscars, Ryan Gosling comes and does this amazing performance, choreography, singing, the whole spiel, in a cerise pink tuxedo with rhinestones.
Hmm.
And a whole army of male dancers, all dressed in black tuxedos with a red sash. So it was a homage to Marilyn Monroe, but also an additional commentary on what the Barbie movie was all about in the first place.
Yes.
So I just thought it was so brilliant that the whole thing was like tied back together again in this beautiful ribbon, and his performance was exceptional at the movies.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much for doing all of this for us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll hopefully see you maybe next week, maybe the next week.
Maybe next week.
Thanks, and we'll see you very soon.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.